c'est la vie. In the words of Bono, this is a song that Paul Young sang and we're stealing it back from him. There is freedom within, there is freedom without. Try to catch the deluge in a paper cup. There's a battle ahead, many battles are lost. Never see the end of the road while you're traveling with me. Hey now, hey now. Hey now, hey now. When the world comes in, well they come, they come. Build a wall between us, we know they won't win.
Hi, and welcome to All This and the Oscars Too, Awards Daily's ongoing Oscar podcast. I have a very special episode today. We have two people who have been writing about the Oscars and about film for a very long time. And if you don't know them already, which you probably do, you're going to meet them. One is Tomris Loughley, who writes for Film Journal and also Film School Rejects, I believe, and many other...
Yes. And Time Out and Roger Ebert.
And Time Out and Roger Ebert. She's like a major writer on the rise and does Oscar stuff too, but mainly she's a film critic. And then, of course, we have Mr. Mark Johnson, who I'm sure you all know from Awards Circuit, who's been doing Oscar stuff for like as long as he's been alive, probably.
Not as long as you, but in the last decade.
Like, so. I was like already a senior citizen when he was born. So.
Well, I didn't mean to age you there.
That's okay. No, but I mean, you started, you guys, I don't know when you started, like right. in the 90s. Or, I don't remember. But anyway, everybody knows you've been around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Playing around with it. So Mark's really good at Oscar predicting. He's better than most people that I know. I'm not a very good predictor.
Oh, you're one of the best out there.
I think
you've been winning the Gold Derby, if I'm not mistaken, the past few years. So yeah. We're lucky to be doing this with you right now.
Yes.
Oh, isn't that
Agreed.
So sweet? See, that's why I'm doing this Thank with you. Them, because, you know, in the state of mental collapse, it's really nice to talk to people who really love you. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking, but no, it is really wonderful
to talk
to you.
It's a comfort zone.
It really is. It's a comfort zone. It's two people whose opinions I really trust and two people I really, really like. And both of you guys are just, we wanted to do this podcast because I had been doing an ongoing, like a sort of an on the road podcast at the Telluride Film Festival, carrying around a microphone. And I did a bunch of interviews with Mark. I did a really long one with Tomris, and I didn't hit record twice, so none of those recordings made. So that's why we're doing this, because we want to, you know, I want to bring back some of those conversations we had, which I thought were really interesting and really good.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice to take a step back, you know, because we were reacting in the moment while at Telluride, and now we've kind of had some time to digest some of the films we saw. So it's
absolutely, yeah,
nice break, yeah.
So I've done a little bit of a switcheroo on Lady Bird, which I didn't really
okay.
It didn't really hit me. I mean, it didn't hit me, I think, emotionally the way that I thought that it would. But and so I was judging its Oscar chances based on that. But now I've sort of changed my mind, and I think it has a pretty good chance. And I only say that because of looking at other people's predictions and looking at the reactions and stuff. Like, I feel like I can't trust my own opinion, because I thought that Battle of the Sexes did really well in Telluride, and I'm looking around, and Anne Thompson doesn't even have it predicted for Best Picture. So something's off. Yeah.
I mean, when I was watching Lady Bird, I was trying to not think about it in Oscar terms, but eventually, you know, obviously I did. And like you, Sasha, I was not really sure. I love the movie so much. I love it to the moon and back. But I was not sure how people were going to respond to it and whether it was going to click something in people. But just looking at reactions from Toronto, I think it's probably going to be more popular than I maybe gave it credit for. So I'm just really, really happy. And I think it really does have as good a chance as any. And same with Battle of Sexes. I was pretty, you know, confident about it in Telluride because I think we were talking about this recently. It's a crowd pleaser. It has a lot of those timely issues that we're still talking about. I mean, they should be ancient history issues, but they're still timely issues. And then Emma Stone is last year's Best Actress winner. Everybody loves her. It's just such a winning, pleasant, important movie. And it has that Rocky-esque underdog story that you just feel for in the end. It's very emotional. So why not, you know?
Yeah, I know. It was funny because I was sitting next to Mark on one side and another guy, I don't know if he wants me to mention him, so I won't say his name, but on the other side. And from my experience, it was like a homer. It was like a grand slam homer. The audience loved it. I was sobbing at the end. And then I asked Mark, and Mark was like, yeah, I liked it. Like, and I noticed then that there was something off in my reaction. So maybe, Mark, you could talk about that. Like, because I don't, it's really, like, sometimes when I see a movie that I know isn't good, but that I love anyway, I can understand why people are hesitant with it, you know? But this one, I can't understand it. Like, I honestly don't understand why they would not think it was a good movie. I must be missing something.
Yeah. I'm surprised to hear. I guess I haven't heard the reactions that you guys are hearing. I know a couple of the writers on award circuit have seen it and loved it like we did. So, and I shouldn't say loved it because I didn't necessarily love it like you mentioned. But there's a lot about the film that I really enjoyed. It was one of my favorite movies. You get lost in like seeing so many movies so quickly, and they're all good. Like everything we saw there, you know, of the nine I saw, even Wonderstruck and Downsizing, the two I had at the bottom, were still good movies. They just get sandwiched, you know, Battle of the Sexes I saw on a four-film day. So it kind of got mixed around with all those films for me. And I have a feeling that I'll like it a lot more the second time around, because it was highly entertaining. It's a great story. Emma Stone is amazing at it, even down to the way she walks, like Jean King with that confidence, that strut. So I don't know what kept me from loving it, other than maybe just the fact that it was four movies in one day. But the reaction that I keep hearing about is how much it's, so I'm surprised to hear otherwise, but I think,
you know, which is a real thing to consider in festivals. We really do see these movies back to back to back in this really sandwich time, like you said, and then we're not really giving ourselves enough time to process it.
Right.
But that's why it's great to hear how it plays in other places, and then you kind of sit with it and think about it more.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think still based on the conversation I know I had with Sasha at the festival, of the nine films that I was able to see, I agree with, you know, something that Sasha had mentioned. I don't know if she still feels this way, but Battle of the Sexes feels like the most likely, if the streak at Telluride is going to continue, it feels like Battle of the Sexes would fit that bill the best. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I did. I felt that way at first, but now I'm starting to hear Darkest Hour stuff. Like, I talked to David Poland the other day when I saw him with after seeing Mother, and he said that he thought Darkest Hour would win. And then I saw that Anne Thompson had it. I mean, you know, you can't always just look around at what other people are predicting and go by that, because I don't do it that way. You know, I look at the way I look at what I think can win is, what's going to fly under the radar? What's going to not be attacked? What's something that everybody likes? And I thought that nobody hated Battle of the Sexes, and now I see that it's a lot more, I guess, divisive than I thought it was, you know?
I'm really surprised by that. That's really surprising.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's funny. A couple of days ago, my husband sent me an article about some of the controversial things about Churchill that obviously, you know, everybody always talks about. Mm-hmm. And then he sort of framed it as, oh, just in time for Darkest Hour. And I thought, oh my God, I created a monster. Even Eric is now thinking in these terms of Oscar controversy.
Right.
But I mean, you know, there's also that element that it might just open up some debates. And it's still September and so early, and we don't know how some of those conversations are going to shape.
Absolutely. That is really true, that if it ever wins any award, because, you know, La La Land, had the unfortunate luck of being the front runner. So once you're the front runner, people do start to look for ways to tear you down, and that will happen. The best thing that can happen to Darkest Hour is it other movies are getting all the attention and focus, and it just scoots on by and doesn't get any of the controversy. Right. But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know what to say about that, except that, yes, you know, he had, you know, he has bad things in his past, you know.
Right.
And there, it's going to be a shitstorm, a little bit of a shitstorm, you know.
And then we were having some of these conversations in Telluride before Darkest Hour won Venice. I mean, not that winning Venice or winning Toronto means really anything for Oscar race, but it still, you know, is a point on their court, and then it's just another reason people will talk about it. So The Shape of Water, I'm giving it more chance than I did in Telluride, because in Telluride, even though I really loved the movie, I thought, oh, it's a fantasy, it's a genre movie, it's a little too, you know, mystical, fanciful, maybe not quite the kind of movie that wins Best Picture, but I think we also learned last year, we don't really know what's going to win Best Picture until, you know, it happens.
We really don't, because of the preferential
ballot. And Sasha, you knew, but a lot of people didn't.
I didn't know until the very last minute, though, because I did not think it was Moonlight would win. In fact, if anything, I thought Hidden Figures might be the one that upset it. It wasn't until I did those Facebook polls, honestly, that I saw that Moonlight was going to be unbeatable, just because of how people were ranking the movies, and that's the only reason that I was able to predict it. Otherwise, if I hadn't done that poll, I would never have been able to. I mean, I didn't have like a sneaking suspicion it was going to win or anything like that. I mean, I could see that there was momentum for it at the last minute and that nobody hated it, for sure, but I didn't know that, you know, the preferential ballot, if it's competitive at all, it doesn't matter so much what people pick as their number one movie, unless it's like overwhelming by half, you know, like it has to be 50% plus love for the movie for it to win on the first round. But if it's competitive at all, then people are so sick of hearing me explain this, because it's all I ever talk about. But it's important to grasp it, because if the two favorite movies aren't their favorite movie, if La La Land whatever the other one was, I don't even think it was Moonlight, was it? Was it those two heading in? I don't know if I remember that.
And Manchester. Yeah.
And there's Manchester, too. Yeah. Those three.
And so how they rank, if they don't put those top two movies at the top, like, how do they rank them? You know, where do they put Manchester, or if Arrival, or if Fences, or if Hidden Figures, or if any of these other movies are their favorite movie? How do they rank the top two? And in those cases, Moonlight always came out ahead, because La La Land was more of a favorite than it was a middle ground favorite. You know, same thing with Gravity, probably, and same thing with Revenant. Right. You know, these movies that are passionately loved, they need to also be able to hit the middle ground, like Spotlight probably did. You know, they have to be loved, and then they have to be liked, and to sit in the middle, you know.
And it's funny, Chris Tapley of Variety tweeted something interesting yesterday, saying it's becoming a really kind of polarizing or divisive season. Everybody is responding to these movies in different ways. So I guess it's true. I mean, divisiveness always happens, but maybe it starts a little later. But this year, I feel like every movie is kind of split based on the reactions from festivals. And Sasha, going back to something you said earlier, maybe Battle of the Sexes will be the least divisive. I mean, who knows?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I have my doubts about it being a winner, because, I mean, this is crazy. Yeah. It's crazy, but the truth is we haven't had a movie, a Best Picture winner with a female lead since Million Dollar Baby in 2004. And so that's the only thing that gives me pause about it. Yes, it's true that we're overdue for a movie about a famous female. You know, we have all these movies about Winston Churchill and real life people who are, you know, who are heroes, but we don't have a lot of women that they do these movies about. I'm going to research it to see how many actually get in, but I know it's pretty rare. And if, you know, if a lot of the like steak eater types aren't into that movie for whatever reason, then it's definitely not going to win. But I, you know, the one that I feel like has the least amount of trouble right now, other than the Churchill thing, is Darkest Hour. I really feel like that one has, if you had to pick one that everybody agreed on, I bet that would be the one that turns out to be the one people have the least amount of problems with.
How do you think it will play? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask because, you know, that's sort of, you know, as much as we probably shouldn't think about that movie in those terms, but it's like a companion to Dunkirk.
Yeah.
So there are two Dunkirk movies sort of in the running. Do you think they will kind of cannibalize each other a little bit, or is that how it even works?
I agree. I think that they will. Yeah, I think that is a problem for both movies. Do you agree with that?
And I think that's why I think that's where Darkest Hour's problems lie is not only is it up against a familiar film with Dunkirk, but I just wonder how many people will love it. It feels like the safest bet to be nominated of anything I've seen. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that it's going to be the type of movie that has enough number ones to win.
Yeah.
You know, the films you talked about just a minute ago that had those, that middle ground in there. I think Darkest Hour is going to be maybe not polarizing, but I don't know that it'll be liked enough. You know, I don't know. I think it'll be respected. I think it could lead the field in nominations with all the tech things that it could get, like editing and cinematography and production design, makeup. Like it has a lot of spots that it could tick off. Voters could tick off categories, but I'd be surprised with it winning. I loved it, but I'd be surprised.
Well, I did hear one person who I won't name because he'll probably be upset with me if I do. Not that he would ever listen to this in a million years, but just in case. he said that he had, you know, he didn't think that it was good because it compared to, which I haven't actually seen, but the PBS The Crown. I haven't actually watched it, but he said that anybody who's...
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah.
I have not seen it either, no.
Anybody who's watched that, he said, will compare his performance to John Lithgow's. And this guy that I was talking to said, and John Lithgow is so much better. And he said, oh, yeah, it's the same story, but The Crown does it so much better. So, but I don't know. I mean, I guess you have to think that every Academy member has seen The Crown. But that was the only really negative thing I heard about the movie. But like you guys, I mean, but you know, you always feel that way. I remember when people said Spotlight, I know you loved Spotlight, Mark, out of Telluride, but didn't you feel like at the end of Telluride that, you know, you thought it was really good, but you know, you just don't know if it's the winner until the year is up. Like, it's just hard to be able, and even then it was hard to predict Spotlight. You know, it was really hard to predict that.
I think the preferential ballot has made it where we have to wait until we see reactions, maybe, to know. Like, I remember in the early 2000s and whatnot, like, movies like A Beautiful Mind and Chicago and whatnot, they all felt like you knew instantly that's your best picture winner.
Yeah.
And nowadays, it's just so much more challenging because you see a movie like Spotlight or La La Land, for example. La La Land, I walked away from thinking, oh my God, that movie's going to win eight, nine, 10 Oscars. And, you know, so you, the backlash factor is so prevalent, it seems, in this new way of voting.
I know.
I mean, there's that, but there's also, I mean, like the year of Spotlight, you know, when I left Telluride that year, I thought, maybe we saw a Best Picture winner here, but maybe we didn't. Last year, I was sure that we have seen a Best Picture winner. I mean, I didn't say La La Land for sure, but, you know, based on the movies I've seen. But this year, I'm still back at that year where I'm thinking, maybe it's one of these movies, but maybe not. You know, I'm not entirely sure. So it sounds like maybe you're in a similar spot.
I know. I thought it was just...
I don't know.
I thought it was just me, you know. I was looking at it and I was going, you know, you just spent too much time focusing on the election and you're just not on it with the Oscars and you have no idea what's going on. But it seems like there's a lot of disagreement around. I think that we've gotten ourselves into this pattern of Telluride delivering the movie, you know, and it's hard to... But then you look at what's happening in Toronto and I'm not seeing any Best Picture movie there yet, you know. I'm seeing...
Nope, I'm not either.
Good boost for Lady Bird, I thought, there. and a good boost for The Shape of Water, again, which is going to do really well. But I don't know about Lady Bird because, you know, you are looking at an academy mostly of older men. Older men seem to like this movie, though. You got to say that. Mm-hmm. But it's possible. But but Molly's Game kind of...
Sorry.
That's a boy. That's I mean, one
that
of
was a, that was a one yay for Lady Bird. I'll take it.
I know, right? Maybe we'll have
I
our
think
first.
The Indians just scored some runs.
I mean, because I think that, you know, Lady Bird, could, do you think it could be the first movie in a long time that was directed by a woman that could win? I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine a teen movie like that winning Best Picture. But.
I can't see it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, as much as I would want to see it, and, you know, again, I love the movie so much. I gave it a 5-star review, but, you know, I'm also trying to think of... But again, you know, like, who is an Academy voter now? The membership has expanded. It's become younger. It's becoming more diverse. I know, like, percentages don't change a whole lot, but still, you know, like, what we used to think we know about these people are sort of changing. So... Again, it just makes it tricky to just say definitely they're not going to respond to it because the membership is starting to look and feel different.
Right. That's right, yeah.
Very true.
And we don't know what kind of, you know, controversies are going to erupt. You guys, Mark, if you have to go or whatever, just let me know. And, I mean, don't feel like you have
No, I'm good.
You're good, okay. Because I am going to turn this, I'm going to turn this conversation personal in a minute and ask you guys like your personal relation, not relationship, but your, well, tell me about your relationship. No, about your personal experiences at Telluride. But first, I just want to finish this and say that I forgot what I was going to say. No, what were we just, Thomas? What did you just say? Oh yeah, older Academy members. Yeah, we don't know what controversies are gonna start. Like we don't know what kind of Oscar so white nightmare is waiting down the end of the road here, for instance. We don't know what, for instance, you know, I'm not looking around and seeing a lot of diversity, particularly with the Oscar race. I'm maybe Mudbound.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love Mudbound to go far and all the way. It's really a very sophisticated, novelistic, accomplished film and filmmaking. I mean, the cinematographer, I think, was Rachel Morrison, who's, you know, also a female cinematographer, and the director, Dee Reese, who's done Pariah before. So that movie is a very Oscar movie, in my opinion, but the only question on that court is Netflix. You know, will people think of it as a cinema movie or, you know, just something that goes to DVD,
right.
Because Netflix had challenges with their movies in the past, but maybe this is their first year that they will crack the race. Who knows?
Well, no, you bring up a really good point, and I hadn't even thought of that, but there's right now in Hollywood, there's a billboard that says Netflix sucks. So it's like if...
Oh, gosh.
I don't think it sucks.
Yeah,
I don't think it sucks, but it sounds to me like that could be a potential controversy, something strike against a movie if it has Netflix on it. I don't know. I mean, I thought that about Manchester by the Sea. I thought it could win Best Picture if it wasn't for the fact that it was an Amazon movie. But I think people were reluctant to think of it in terms of Best Picture because Best Picture has always traditionally been about the studio, you know? That's the history of the Oscar race. It was always Warner Brothers or Paramount or something. And I know that the indies have broken that up a lot, but it's still a lot to ask of them to say, we're just giving up.
But I think people also think of Amazon and Netflix in really different terms because Amazon gives the movies a really fair theatrical shot. And there is a window between theatrical and when you can watch it at home. So Manchester was really treated and pushed as a theatrical movie.
Yeah, but it still had the Amazon logo on it.
True.
I kept telling them to take it off. I said, just for the, you know, and I'm Beast of No Nation, I kept saying, just take away the Netflix logo. Just don't even show it on there. And that wouldn't they wouldn't do it because this is part of their branding, you know, as a company. And they want that out there. Right. They want the respect that goes along with an Oscar nomination, which is why it's an investment for them. You know, otherwise they wouldn't do it. But I agree with you, Thomas. I'm 100% on your page with that. I'm just wondering about, you know, traditional Academy people, how they're going to react.
Right. And how about some of the other Sundance/Cannes movies? Have either of you, I can't remember, seen The Florida Project yet?
No.
We haven't seen that.
I've heard nothing but good stuff.
Yeah, that's another one I'm wondering about, you know, how that's going to do. And yeah. Call Me By Your Name, I haven't seen either, so.
Yeah, right. I mean, Call Me By Your Name is fantastic, but, and so is Florida Project, which played in Cannes. I mean, based on nothing other than this very unscientific kind of gut feeling, I just have a feeling that when people watch Florida Project, they will really, really be affected by it, and they won't really be able to forget about it. It has that mm-hmm. kind of ending to it.
Wow.
It's really, I mean, that kind of just dawned on me, this, because I was unprepared for it the first time, but the second time I watched it, I just thought to myself, I cannot imagine anyone, you know, no matter what age or background, watching this movie and not having an emotional response to it. So it really has that emotional close to the film.
Hmm. Yeah, I almost put that down on my predictions today, and then I took it off and I put Lady Bird on instead. I just looked at a picture of Greta Gerwig hanging out with Jessica Chastain or something, and I just thought, wow, she looks so, you know, like she's arrived. I mean, there's just something about it that I feel like people are going to rally around her, and, you know,
right.
You know, I think there's going to be a lot, you know, Tracy Letts, and there's going to be a lot of industry support for that movie. But The Florida Project, I suspect both of them are going to do really, really well at the Spirit Awards, too. Like, I think they're both going to be nominated. And okay, so before you guys have to run off, tell me, Thomas, you went to Cannes this year for the first time. Can you talk a little bit about that? You went to Sundance, you went to Cannes, and you went to Telluride. And how would you say these three festivals are? I know she did. She went to all of them. How would you say they're different?
Which
is your favorite?
Well, it was my first time in Cannes, so it's really hard for me to kind of talk about it in a way that, you know, that will sound like I know what I'm talking about, because I feel like by the time I figured it out, the festival ended. So I'm like, oh, that's how you do it, and then oops, I'm leaving tomorrow. Well, it was really like no other festival. I mean, in a way, it's actually not a difficult festival to navigate, because the venues aren't really that far from each other. Everything's on sort of a single avenue. But what makes it challenging is all the badge levels, that you're kind of in this caste system, and the time that you're going to have to wait on a line depends on the color of your badge. So I was sort of this mid-range blue badge, which, you know, it was okay. I got into most of the movies that I wanted to, but it still made it challenging. I couldn't make last-minute decisions. I had to kind of build in wait time, but obviously it was a huge privilege to be there, and I was just completely drunk by all of it. And I both really loved it, and I also really didn't love it, but, you know, I would love to go again, probably not next year. I mean, Sundance is, I've been going for 5 or 6 years now. 5 years, I think. It's a challenge. It's a real challenge, because, you know, you're kind of fighting against the weather on top of everything else, and then the venues are far apart. So it's not like Telluride or Cannes at all. You really need to work on a schedule, and it's probably the most tiring of the festivals that I attend to. And you guys know what Telluride is like. It's paradise. It's just too short. Wow. That's my only complaint about Telluride. One more day, I think, would make that festival a lot better, because I came back having not seen a couple of the sort of sleeper hits, Lean on Pete and Foxtrot, but you know, that's one of the best festivals ever that I've attended to.
Next year, Mark, we're going to stay that extra day.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, because Monday, I did stay Monday, and it, you know, actually we were all there together Monday, but I had the opportunity to stay the full day Monday, but there just wasn't as much on the slate that day. Like the ones you mentioned, Thomas, Lean on Pete, what's the animated one? Loving Vincent or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Which was beautiful, by the way. Yeah. Loving Vincent.
I wanted to see that. Yeah, there were quite a few that I didn't get to see that I would like to, that I was hoping would play on Monday. And you know, I had no complaints about the festival, but I agree, an extra day of more of the films that we're talking about there would be perfect.
Yeah.
And I love the amount of films they have. It's the perfect amount. It's just a day yeah. short of hitting them all.
You know, it's so funny. The first year I went to Telluride 5 years ago, it was their 40th anniversary. So they started the festival Thursday afternoon as opposed to Friday afternoon. So they had an extra day.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is so great. It's perfect. That was not the norm. But I had in my head that I would be able to see everything I wanted. But then the next year I returned, I'm like, oh, my God, I thought we were just starting, but it's already over.
Right. It does go by so fast.
Yeah.
So. I wonder if they could do like a press day on Thursday, you know, like just have the press be able to see movies and not have it open to the patrons unless they want to. But that would give, because I know Cannes does that. They give the press a special, you know, screening, a special look at the films. And since, I mean, the Telluride doesn't really want it to be like a publicity thing.
Right.
But they still invite us. You know, they invite us. So they should just deal with the fact that they invite press people and that we want to see the movies and we're there to see the movies. But if they could just make it that Thursday afternoon, I think that would be so good if they could just do that, you know. But
yeah, I agree.
As you can't
see.
Well,
how about you, Sasha? What about your personal attachments to festivals? You've never done Sundance, right?
I never have done Sundance, and I've never done Toronto. I think this would have been a good year to do Toronto. Most of my early days, like I was noticing Chris Tapley has a little toddler at home. Well, he has a toddler and he has a mom to take care of the toddler. Like I never had the mom to take care of the toddler. I was the mom. So it's like, I couldn't do a lot of festivals and stuff. Like I couldn't, because it conflicted with school schedules. This is like the first year that I'm without a daughter. Like I'm actually like single and completely alone. And so it's weird.
Aww.
No, I don't mean it in a sad way. I just mean
us.
That I have you guys and I have Twitter. No, but I mean, I have these, as Mark knows, because, and you know, Thomas, because you met them, but I have these dogs. And so they're kind of demanding.
Yeah.
And I definitely project my parenting onto them. Like, I feel like they're my kids. And so I always have to, like, I've been invited to the Savannah Film Festival coming up here at the end of October.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You'd love that one, Mark. You should check into going to.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's really a neat town, and it's really slow and fun and southern, and the people are really nice. And so if I go, I got to drive because I want to bring my doggies, you know, or else I have to fly, and then that's a drag. And so that's my only consideration, is that I'm always trying to navigate whatever kind of other thing I have in my life. And this year, as Mark knows, it was the dogs. It was like, wake up early, take the dog out, come back, take the dog out. You know, Michael was there. My friend Michael was there, and he helped with the dogs a little bit. And I'm sounding like a total crazy person, and I'll probably cut all of this out. But that sort of, you know, it's just like, what's this crazy woman talking about her dogs? But I'll give you a different answer, which is, that you know, I really like Cannes because it is so far removed from the Oscar race. That's one of the things I really loved about it, was I felt like I was able to just go there and really enjoy the movies. I feel like at Telluride, there's so much pressure on the movies, you know, to be good. And like you, Thomas, I get so disappointed when I see and disheartened when I see people, you know, snarking them so quickly on Twitter. It really hurts for some reason, because they put so much into these movies, and especially if you really love a movie.
Yeah. But,
you know, they just say things like, well, that's not winning Best Picture or something like that. And, you know, we know that that's how we have to think. But, you know, sometimes I do like to escape that. And I feel like as Telluride becomes more and more of a precursor to the Best Picture race, which it is, it's going to get more and more like that, you know. And if it did break the trend 1 year, then it would probably go back to being just a much more enjoyable and not so much pressure.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's one of the reasons that I really adore Sundance, because it happens in January, sort of the third week, starts at the third week of January, and usually either right after or around the time the Oscar nominations are being announced for the obviously previous year. So you're seeing all these new movies that we're going to talk about in the next 8 or 9 months after. So, you know, no one has seen these movies. They're so new. A lot of the people are new. The filmmakers are new. So it's almost like a little oasis of just removing yourself from all the conversations you've been having around the same movies since September. Yeah. And just kind of giving yourself the breathing room to see some other new crazy movies like Manchester by the Sea that you will obsess about next September. So,
yeah, exactly. Well,
I mean, that was Call Me By Your Name for me. I saw that in January, and here we are talking about it. But it was really nice to have that and sort of kind of file that in my head somewhere and does not it, think about it, just love it.
Does Sundance feel like Telluride? Like, is it the same kind of crowd, you know, like mountains and, you know, I know it's a lot of snow, it's snowing there, but does it feel sort of intimate like Telluride does, or is it much more overcrowded and suffocating? And
No, it does not feel intimate at all. It's the opposite of intimate. It's awful. Mm. It's so lonely. Everybody is mean. Oh, I'm kidding.
I was like, wow.
But it is right? Really lonely because, you know, there are so many venues and it's so spread out. So you're just running around all the time and you're kind of on your own trying to figure it out. And it's not the same kind of friendly crowd either, because the weather is so awful and nobody is in their best behavior.
Right.
So you're really there for the movies. You kind of just find your people, a handful of people, and then just ignore the rest of it and then just do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Not like Telluride.
Not like Telluride. Telluride is a very special, really fun place to be for way too short of a time, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you guys should try out New York Film Festival one of these days.
I would love to. That's coming up here soon, right? That's
very soon. Press screenings start next week, and the actual festival starts on the 28th.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. We still have, we're all acting like we have the Oscar race almost sewn up, but there's still a long way to go, right. A lot of movies to see.
Yeah.
So,
lots of unseen. So.
We'll have to check back in with you guys, and I guess we can do like another thing where we all three get together, because it's been really fun for me.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah,
this was great. Yeah, let's do it again.
You've been listening to All This in the Oscars 2 special Telluride edition with Thomas Laughley and Mark Johnson, special guests. You can find us on Twitter at Awards Daily, at Tommy Laughley, that's TOMILAFFLY, and at Mark Likes Movies. And we'll be back next week with another episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Hipsters in Shoreditch could never style it, and all of the bankers in Moorgate could never buy it for you. This is simple and it's true. So let's go swimming this afternoon. The water here is so clear, I can see to the bottom. And it's so strange in winter, all this will be frozen solid. I tell you, it feels new.